Everybody up in that name, Frank. I'm gratefully here from Savannah, Georgia, a member of the Primary Purpose Home Group, and it's the greatest home group in the world. Yeah. And if you don't think your home group's the greatest in the world, keep coming back and find the greatest home group, because that's what it's all about. It's about recovery. It's about keep coming back. It's about carrying a message. This past week, I celebrated 30 years clean, which is amazing. It's been an amazing journey. For me, my journey started down in South Florida. That's where I got started at. You know, I was, like most of us, you know, typical addict. I was using was fun. And where it became fun to becoming a full-blown addict, I don't know when that happened. I couldn't tell you what drug it was, what time it was, what day it was. All I know, it came from having fun, becoming a full-blown addict. I can tell you my favorite drug of choice was when I went over to my dealer's house and they were doing this funny stuff. I said, what are you guys doing? They said, well, you heard about Richard Pryor blowing himself up, caught himself on fire, almost died. I said, yeah. He said, this is how he did it. I said, I want to try that. Swear to God. I was going from a downward slide to a free fall after that. You know, in the basic text, it talks about our lives were reduced to the animal level. That's the way it was when I got here. You know, it got to the point to where the house I was living in, I was getting evicted out of because I wasn't paying rent. They turned off the electricity. I turned it back on. They come and took the meter. I took a coat hanger and jumped the meter so I'd have electricity. I thought I was outsmarting everybody. I realized that I could have killed myself. My house was under surveillance, so I thought I was real slick by sneaking out the window and running around the back and watching the cops watching me. You know, I thought that was the way to do it, you know. I didn't know any better, you know. And a lot of stuff that got me here was the fact that during my active addiction, I got married. I met this girl, and she'd come over with a bottle of wine and a bag of dope and screw my brains out, so I knew it was love. That's what I thought love was, brother. And because of that relationship, I got two beautiful daughters and a friendship for life, and there's nothing to complain about that. You know, we've been able to stay friends over all these years. You know, got to many times I didn't like her, but I didn't hate her, but I just didn't like her anymore because it was like, yeah, you do what you do, I need to do what I need to do. And when I got to that point where I hit my bottom, I wound up in the hospital with a case of hepatitis C. And I knew it was because of my drug addiction, because of the way I was living my life, and they pretty much basically detoxed me in that hospital. And when I got out of that hospital a week later, I told myself, I said, I got to quit doing this stuff. You know, I got to stop. I got out that morning. By that evening, I was back doing my drug of choice, and I was right back in the shit all over again. I was like, I got to do something different. Something's got to change here. And I got to that point to where I said, you know, something's drastically wrong with the way I'm living. And I thought, well, maybe because my house is under surveillance and the cops are looking for me over some stolen property and a lot of other things that were going on. I thought, well, if I go to jail, that'll be my salvation. I thought that's what addicts did. You know, it's like either you go to jail, you wind up in treatment somewhere, or long-term, you know, lock you away, or you wind up a Jesus freak. I thought these were probably the only options I had left. I knew nothing about recovery. I knew nothing about Narcotics Anonymous. The only thing I did know about recovery, my mother in law at the time, she was in the other fellowship, and they talked about that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde syndrome, and I knew what that was about because I saw her do that when she was drinking. It was like, oh, yeah, this doesn't work because I'm seeing doing what she was doing. But she told me about when I finally got honest and said, look, I need help. I took my girls and ran home to mom's house, you know, good old mom detoxed on her couch because I had nowhere else to go. And during that time, it was a series of events that got me here. And she told me, she said, well, there's this NA meeting you might want to go to. And I said, what's that? And she said, well, it's people like you that's got a drug problem. I had no idea what I was walking into. You know, all I didn't know much was I walked into my first meeting. I shared a little bit about why I was there. And they gave me a white book and a white key tag, and they told me to keep coming back. And I was like, it made me feel welcome. That was the first time in a long time I felt welcome somewhere. Because for most of the time, what I heard was, white boy, don't come back here no more. That's what I heard. And that's what I was used to. And they made me feel welcome. And I looked around the rooms, and there were people just like me. You know, except the only thing was, they weren't using. And they had this glow about them. And they had this thing going on. And they said they found it in this program. And I said, that's what I wanted. You know, and I listened to this guy that was chairing the meeting that night, and he was talking about how he used to be able to make it rain, and he had to deal with this guy wearing his skin. And I thought to myself, I was like, man, this guy stayed out there just one day too long. I mean, he just burned too many brain cells or something. He wanted to be my first sponsor, you know, and I'm very grateful to him because he showed me how this program worked. And I needed that because I got here with so much anger. It was all because of that drug that I wound up here, you know, and I knew that. And I came in here with my arms crossed going like, well, what are you people going to teach me? And I thought, well, if you just teach me how to quit doing this one real bad drug, I can go back to the way I was living. And I thought that's what this was about. You know, and I got about 30 days and that disease started, you know, saying, okay, well, you know, you've been clean now. Things are getting a little bit better. You can go back. It'll be like starting over. And people told me, it says, it's not like starting over. If you pick up again, you'll pick up right where you left off. I went, oh no, I've been clean for 30 days. It'll be different this time. And sure enough, man, 30 days, man, I picked up and I was right back in where I left off in one day, and that scared me. And I got back in the meetings and I said, I can't do this anymore. I need you people. And I'd get 2 weeks and I'd go back out. I'd get 30 more days, I'd go back out. I kept bouncing in and out. You know, I'd listen to what you had to share because you had great stuff, but it was like this disease kept telling me, you ain't going to get it. You can't do this, you know. And every time I'd relapse, I'd go like, well, I'm just going to do this. Or I'm going to do a little bit of that. And I would do that, and I was going like, well, if you're going to do that, you might as well do what you really want to do. And like I said, it'd take me right back to that insanity all over again. And they told me when I got here, I got that gift of desperation. And I said, well, where do I give it back? I don't want this gift anymore. You know? This is crazy. I don't know how to do this. But I got that white book, and I carried it in my back pocket, and I knew that if I'd get to a meeting every night, I would be safe. At that time down there in South Florida, there weren't that many meetings. You know, I got clean around the Treasure Coast area, and it's like if you want to hit a meeting every night, you go to Fort Pierce, you go to Stewart, you go down up to Vero Beach, and if you really want to hit a really big meeting, you go down to Palm Beach, and there'd be like 20 addicts in there. It was like, that was huge. You know, I didn't realize how big this fellowship was until I started, you know, sticking around and got to know you people a lot more, and that was really cool. But I got that basic text, and I got a sponsor, and I told him, I said, man, I don't get this. I keep coming back, but I don't understand why I keep relapsing. He said, that's because you're an addict. You like to get high. And I was like, ooh, of course. I love to get high, but I just don't want the consequences that go along with it. How do I do that? And he's like, I don't know. You figure it out. Let me know. You know, it's like, I just didn't know. And I would go to meetings, and people say, well, did you surrender? And I said, surrender? I said, yeah, quit using. That's what you do, right? And they said, no, did you surrender? And I'm going like, right over my head. I had no idea what they were talking about. You know, I thought, well, you just quit using, you come to meetings, and that's what it was about. And I said, well, if you don't use, you don't get high, but if you want to recover, you got to learn how to work these steps. Well, I didn't know how to work any of these steps. I didn't know how to work this program. I didn't know how to do any of this stuff. You know, but I knew I had a sponsor, and I knew that if I got to a meeting every night, I would be safe. And my last relapse, it wasn't a whole lot of dope that I did, but it's what it did to me. You know, I had about 5 months clean, and I relapsed again, and I was right back in it again, and I'm going like, I can't do this anymore. Got to do something different. You know, and I was very fortunate that I got to go to a convention. It was a frickin' convention. And it was the theme of that convention was Elias Did, We Do Recover. And I listened to that speakers, and I went to the meetings, and I went to the relapse and recovery meeting, and I was in there teary-eyed, crying, and sharing about why I was there. And the main speaker that night was Vito L. And he talked about things that just blew me out of the water. He said, if I'm mature and responsible in any given situation, the results will be the same. And I was like, oh my God, nobody ever told me that. I missed that class. You know, why didn't somebody tell me that? And then he talked about having double digits, wanting to hang himself. And I'm going like, well, wait a minute, whoa, whoa, whoa. You just told me how to do this, and then you wanted to kill yourself. It just didn't make any sense to me. You know, so I got back to my area. I got with my sponsor, and I shared about what had happened. And I told him, I'm ready. I surrendered. I'm done. You know, I drove to that convention. I had this old beat-up Chevy Impala. Didn't even have a driver's window. And when it rained, that car wouldn't go. So the only thing I took with me was a change of clothes and a screwdriver. And the screwdriver was to take the plate off the car because wherever it died, I was going to leave it. Because I knew it wasn't going to get me to Orlando and back. There was no way. That car got me there and back and then some. It was amazing. You know, so I was real grateful for that. And I got back and I told him, I said, you know, I'm ready to do the deal here. How do I do this? And he said, well, first thing you need to do is do 90 and 90 again. And I said, I did that before. And he said, well, guess what? You get to do it again. And I said, well, why do you have to do 90 and 90? He said, well, he did it 5 times in a row and it worked for him. And he said, he's never seen anybody that's got any long-term recovery that hasn't done that 90 and 90 first. And so I realized, you know, I need to follow some direction. And that's what I did. I did that 90 and 90. And I did another 90 and 90. And I'd go to meetings and I'd tell him, I said, man, I love going to these meetings. I'm always learning something. He said, that's because you don't know anything. And he was right. He told me I could build a whole world on what I didn't know. And he was right about that. So I kept coming back. And then after about 6 months, I went to him. I said, you know, I'm tired of going to the same meetings, hear the same people say the same shit over and over. You know, it's so repetitive. I just don't get it. And he said, those are the same people that are going to save your life. In that one sentence, he took all that negativity and turned it right around and turned it into a positive. And I knew he was right. You know, those are the same people that are going to save my life. And it has been that way. I got involved in service early on in recovery. I became a GSR. I had no idea what a GSR was. They said, oh, you're going to represent our group. We're going to meet out here in Okeechobee, and then we're going to have this little meeting, and everybody gets together. And I got out there for the service meeting, and he was there, his wife was there, and a whole bunch of people that I didn't know. And the only thing I remember about it is they sold some literature, they argued about some motions, and they said, let's do it again next month. That's all I remember about that. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. I like this. You know. And so I became involved in service early on, and it was because it was a need. We needed to be involved. You know, they told me stick with the winners, and for me, everybody that was a winner in recovery was involved in service. You know, service has been my lifeline. That's the thing that's the glue that's held me together all these years. There's times that I've coasted in my recovery, but if it wasn't for service, I wouldn't be here. And those are things that keep me coming back, and it's so important. You know, I got that year clean, and I thought, man, this is amazing. You know, I was working that first step, and I went to him. I said, you know, how do I work this first step? You know, I really need to do this. I said, he said, well, it says right here that we're powerless over our addiction, that our lives are unmanageable. And I said, I get that part. I said that we're powerless over our addiction, but or the unmanageability part, I said, my life is a train wreck. That's what got me here. I said, but I'm not powerless over drugs. I know what happens every time I use. How can I be powerless? You know, the blinders go on. I'm off and running until the money's all gone, and I got nothing left to sell. You know, and I'm jonesing. That's the worst feeling in the world. I hope I never have to feel that again. You know, so how can I be powerless? He said, keep coming back. He says, we need to work on the second part of that first step. And that's what I did. That's where I started. That was the second part of that first step. And it got me connected to this program. You know, they told me to get a basic text, and that's what I did. I still got my original third edition. That was so important for me when I got that book. Because I would go home at nights, and I'm going like, I don't know what to do. He says, just read your book before you go to sleep. And I started reading stories out of the book, and I'm going like, well, I can't relate to this guy. I can't relate to this girl. And I'd read another story, and I'm going like, oh, shit, I did the same things this cat did. Wow. And then I'd read some more, and I'm going like, I knew they were watching me. I knew it. But the cool thing about it was the more I read that book, the more I realized somebody was able to put down on words what I was feeling and didn't know how to express. And that was the truth about it. That was a real eye-opener for me when I realized, you know, this was a book about addicts for addicts to help us recover. You know, it says right there, I was looking at it this morning, it said, if you found this book, give yourself a break and read it. It's about recovery, not about addiction. And that is so cool. I think my favorite line in the basic text, it says, you know, everything we know is subject to revision, especially what we know about the truth. It's in the Just for Today. And that's so true for me, because when I got here, I had all these preconceived ideas of what an addict was. You know, I thought, as long as I'm not sticking a needle in my arm, I'm not an addict, you know. I did everything but I knew as soon as I did that, then I'd be an addict, you know. And I'd listen to people's stories, and I'd say, well, maybe I'm not done yet. Because I would hear people, you know, their war stories, and I'm going, well, now I got a couple of years left. I can keep going. And they said, you have all those yets. What makes you think you're going to survive all that? And I was like, you're right. And they said, it's not what or how much you did, it's what it did to you. And I went, that's the key right there. I knew I was in the right place. I knew this is what this program had to offer me, the way out, you know, a new way to live. And I love the theme about that, new way to live. You know, my sponsor, we talk about that all the time. You know, addicts, most addicts when we get here, you know, we stop using drugs. That's the most important thing we have to do, because that's the only way we're going to get get that cloud out of our head. And we stop using drugs. We hang around these rooms for a while. We get to know some people. We go to meetings, and we start to lose that desire to use. But when we get to that third part of it, finding that new way to live, that's where most of us get lost. That's where we kind of lose track. You know, they told me when we got here, this was a spiritual, not religious program. And when they talked about God, it was like I was ready to bolt for the door. You know, it's like, wait a minute, no, that's not why I'm here. You know, I don't want to, you know, talk about God. I don't want to talk about religion. And they said, we're not talking about God and religion. We're talking about spirituality. There's a difference. They told me, they said, religion is for people who don't want to go to hell, and spirituality is for people who've been there and don't want to go back. And that made sense to me, because I'd been, the way I was living, it was a pure hell, and I didn't want to live that way any longer. So I decided this is what I wanted to do. You know, so I dove into the steps with my sponsor, and I started doing all the things they suggested. They said, get involved, get a home group, you know, be a part of, and that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, I got that year clean, and I was, like, so excited. I was like, wow, this is great. You know, I'm celebrating the year clean, and my sponsor says, a couple weeks, you can come down to Earth, and we'll ready to start working steps. And I'm going, go away, man, you're a buzzkill. I don't want to talk to you anymore. And about 2 weeks, I was ready. I said, okay, I'm ready to start working the second step. And he said, well, just write down your insanity. He says, it's real simple. He says, you know, we're asking that power greater than ourselves is going to restore us to sanity. And for me, the only power greater than myself that I recognized was Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. you people became my higher power. That basic text became my higher power. Because everything I'd read in there, it didn't steer me wrong. It showed me this way to live, and that was my higher power. And he says, write down all your insanity. So I started this list of writing down all my insanities that I had done over the years. And I went to him and I said, you know, I've been working on that list for a while, but I don't think I'm done. He said, well, keep going to meetings and keep sharing about it and keep talking about the second step. So I go to meetings and I talk about the second step. And there was this little girl that was in that meeting that night. She said, you know, using drugs was a real insane thing to do. And I went, that was nowhere on my list. I never saw using as an insanity. I saw it as a solution. But I realized once I heard it that way, it's like, you're right. It was an insane thing to do. And I was able to finish up that second step list. And I got to that third step, and then I was like, struggled. Like a lot of us, you know, I got here and I was raised in a good Catholic family and religion and all that stuff. And through the years, it's like I lost contact with that. You know, it was a damning God. I knew the first time I touched myself, I was going to hell. So I'm going to take the bullet train, you know. And so I had a lot of problems with God. And so they talked about it's the God of your understanding. And I'm going like, I have no clue what God is. And they said, well, keep coming back. Keep listening. You'll find the answers. And people would tell me stuff. I had a good friend of mine who said, it says right there in the third step prayer. And I'm going like, there's no prayer in the third step. He says, yeah, there it is. It's right there. Take my will and my life. Guide me in my recovery. Show me how to live. And I went, wow, that's pretty cool. And I've read over that I don't know how many times, but I never saw it as the third step prayer. So I was like, yeah, I have to take that and use that. And I said, well, how do you pray in these rooms? I don't know how to do this. My sponsor said, just ask for help in the morning and say thanks at night. And he said, do it on your knees because that helps with the humbling experience. So that's what I did. That's how I started on my third step prayer. And that third step took me on a long journey. It took me a couple of years to get through that third step because, like I said, I had to struggle with God and I really didn't understand what this was about. And he told me, you know, all our steps begin with we. But that third step is a one-on-one relationship that you're going to have with your higher power. And you better believe 100% of what you're talking to, otherwise keep looking, because if you don't believe 100%, you haven't found your God of your understanding yet. And so that's what I did. I started on that journey, and I started looking at the religion I was raised in, and I went back to that church, and I hung around these rooms long enough to learn there was a difference between spirituality and religion, and I'd heard about 10 minutes of spirituality, and the rest was all dogma. But I recognized the difference the first time in my life. And I realized, okay, well, this is great, but this is not for me. So then I started going to other churches, and I started looking at other beliefs. I started looking at the way the Indians believe. I looked at past religions and Eastern religions and looked at what they all had in common, because they always told me, I said, focus on the similarities, not the differences. And that's what I did. I started focusing on the similarities that these people had in common. And I realized that they believed that there was something greater than themselves. There's a power out there that guides them if we're willing to tap into it. They talked about the way to find that is through that prayer and meditation. And that's what I started to do. I realized there was a God in my life, and all I had to do was ask for help. And he was loving, and he was caring, and he was showing me how to live this new way of life. And so I was willing to do whatever it took to keep that way of life. And so it was like I jumped in with both feet. And like I said, I was involved in service, you know, and I started chasing all the women because it was like, that's what we do out of 18 months. It's like, man, all you women were looking good. And it's like, been a long time since I've been in a relationship. I didn't know how to have a relationship. I didn't know how to have a healthy relationship is what it boiled down to. Because you girls would come up and talk to me. It's like, oh, she wants me. I know it. She's talking to me. She wants me. And it was like, I didn't know. I just didn't know how to be friends with women in the rooms because I didn't have any sisters. You know, I had two brothers. I didn't know how to do that kind of stuff. And the people taught me. The women in the room taught me how to be a better man. You know, men in the room taught me how to be a better man. You gave me an examples. You know, you showed me how to do this stuff. And my sponsor showed me how to do this stuff. And I'm very grateful for that. You know, so I got to that point, you know, it's like about 3 years clean. I got to the point where it's like, I got to quit hitting on the women in these rooms. You know, they told me, don't sleep with your sister. That's what I was doing. You know, I was sitting in a meeting one night, and there were three girls in that room that I'd slept with all of them, and all of them knew it. And I just wanted to slide out under the door. I feel like such a piece of shit. That's just letting me out. I got to quit doing this. I can't do this any longer. And so that's what I did. So I stayed involved in service. I quit messing with the women, and I kept doing all the things that I was supposed to do. And my sponsor said, well, how are you doing with that four step? And I'm going like, haven't touched it. Hold on a second. This stool's not cooperating. I said, I haven't done it. So he said, well, you need to get started on your four step. So I would start writing on my four step, and I would get involved in service. Like I said, I was involved in PR. I was involved with H&I. I was in TSR for my home group. I was doing all the activities. I was doing everything there was. My service suitcase was heavy. And so it kept me from doing my steps. You know, I used it for an excuse. I used it for a crutch. You know, and I'd get started on that fourth step, and I'd put it back down. Finally got to the point, it's like, I got to finish this fourth step. You know, and I, during that time, I changed sponsors. My sponsor was going through a lot of changes in his life. He was getting divorced, and he was moving, and he told me, he says, you might want to find a new sponsor. And it's like, okay, well, how I need to finish this fourth and fifth step. So I finished the fifth step, and finally, you know, I went to my new sponsor. I got a new sponsor during that time. And I told him, I said, I shared with him where I was at. I said, I just got a new sponsor. I just need to finish my fifth step. I'm ready to do this with you. And we sat down, and he said, I'm not going to do it with you. And I said, what? And he says, I don't want anything to come between this new relationship that we have. And if you do a fifth step with me, I feel like that's we do that. And it's like, man, I've been rejected by my new sponsor. This sucks. So I went back to my old sponsor and did a fifth step with him. And people talked about it all the time. They said, man, I did my fifth step, and the skies opened up, and the sun was shining, and everything was great. Birds were singing. Well, I finished that fifth step, and I felt like, oh, no. Now somebody knows all my stuff. And I felt like, because I felt like they said, oh, this boulder is going to be lifted off your shoulder. It wasn't. I felt like, oh, no, now I'm really a piece of shit because now somebody else knows all my stuff. And it's going to get all over the NA hotline, you know, telephone, telegraph, telematic. You know, I thought that's the way it was, you know. But it wasn't like that, you know. I'd go to meetings and he wouldn't talk about what stuff I talked about. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I can trust this guy, you know. And it got to the point where after a while, it's like, I felt that burden being lifted from me. It's like, wow, I'm ready to move on to 6 and 7 and start looking at some of these character defects and some of these shortcomings. He told me it's real simple. He said, take any character defect. If you do it once, you're probably powerless over it. He said, if you do it twice, it's an insanity. He said, if you do it more than 3 times, you know, it's probably a shortcoming. And he said, if you do it more than that, it's a character defect. It broke it down pretty simple for me. And that's what I needed to hear. You know, because I got here, they said, you got an asshole on drugs, and you take away the drugs, what do you got left? And I went, right here, that's me. You know, I didn't know how to live without drugs. I didn't know that once I quit using, I was still the same person that walked in the doors, but I wanted that change. I wanted to become that new person, you know, and I wanted to learn what this program was about. So I dove into 6 and 7, started looking at some of these character defects, and he said it was real simple. He said, once we identify these character defects, you know, shortcomings, nothing more than acting out on it. It's like, oh, okay. So he said, when you act on it, then you're willing to make amends and do what you need to do. And I said, well, how do you deal with these shortcomings or these character defects? He said, you're aware of them, don't do them. He said, just don't do them. I said, if you're a liar and a thief, quit lying, quit stealing. I'm like, oh, okay, pretty simple stuff. You know, went right over my head. I didn't get it. You know, he told me to go on, you know, make that amends list. And I was very fortunate because early on I was able to make amends to some of those people that I used with that I heard over the years. Because after I got a little bit of time in the rooms, all those people disappeared. And I was able to make some of those amends. And I said, what about the people that I'll never see again? He said, some of the best amends you can do is by not doing the things you used to do. I said, well, how do I make amends to society for the cops that were chasing me and all this other stuff? He said, why don't you do some public service for a while? And I said, so I did that. I did a volunteer for a helpline, for a crisis line was what it was called at the time. And I was doing that for a year. And it was so cool that I was able to give back what was so freely given. You know, and I stayed involved with my home group. I stayed involved with service. Worked through these steps. You know, I got to the 10th step, you know, looking at that prayer meditation and continuing taking daily inventory. That was something that I do on a regular basis. The 11th step has been amazing. That's something that I do on a regular basis. You know, and the 12th step, they said, having had a spiritual awakening, we try to carry the Smith's ethics and practice these principles in all our affairs. And that's what I try to do on a regular basis, because that's what is so important, that we carry this message. That any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, find a new way to live. The message is hope and the promise is freedom, and that's the thing that kept me coming back. You know, and then I wanted to learn about this book. You know, I was got involved in this, like, oh, tell me about this book that we got, you know. And he said, this was written by X for X, and I wanted to read, you know, I read about our symbol, which was real cool. He told me this is, because like most addicts, you know, I'd open up the middle of the book and start reading. They said, no, you need to go back to the front and start reading, you know, the history of how the book came about, you know, the history of our symbol. That was so important to read that, because I didn't know what the symbol meant. You know, I tell people, it's like, read about that. It's pretty interesting stuff. You know, the higher the point of freedom, you know, the shallower the road gets, but the freedom gets higher. And that's so cool and that's so true. You know, I asked my sponsor, so what about all these writings in here that are written in italics? They said, that's Jimmy Cannon's writings. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And I've been very fortunate, you know, I've got to see a lot of the history about Narcotics Anonymous. I got to meet some of the guys that that helped write this basic text. I got to meet Bo Sewell that was instrumental in getting this book written, and living in Georgia has been amazing. So I'm very grateful for that. I spent about 12 years in Florida. You know, I got married, in recovery, got divorced, had my sponsor crying on his shoulder. It's like, you know, here I go again, and I was pointing the finger going like, well, she did this, and she did that. And he said, well, what about you? And I'm going like, yeah, but she. And he said, don't worry about what she's doing. What were you doing? And I'm going like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. And you know, and he said, what could have you done in that relationship? How could have you been a better man? I'm going like, yeah, you know. I was in the hot seat. I didn't like it. But he was, you know, my sponsor has been very honest with me, and he'll call me out on my stuff. You know, he's told me more than once. He says, everything I've letting go of has gone worse. He says, I tend to hang on way too long, and that's true. You know, a lot of that stuff, it's like I'll just hang on till bitter ends, you know. And so I had to let that go. And it was a tough time for me in my recovery because I had about 12 years clean, and I didn't trust my home group anymore. I didn't trust the people that I knew in the rooms anymore because they knew what was going on. She ran off with a newcomer, and yada, yada, yada. Long story short, was, these people knew, and they didn't come tell me anything. I had to find out the hard way. And I was like, I don't know if I can go to meetings and talk about what's going on in my life anymore. So I would have a dinner at my house about twice a month, and I'd bring over my sponsor, and I'd bring over the guys that I sponsored, the people that I trusted, and we'd have a meeting at my house, and we'd talk about what was going on in my life, because I didn't feel like I could talk about what was really going on in my life in the rooms, and that's a bad place to be. It really is, and I had to do that for me. And he told me about the sponsorship retreat that was going on up in North Carolina. He says, you need to come up here with us and go to this retreat. So I said, okay. And I met some of the brothers, my brothers in recovery, and we went up to this retreat, and it was awesome. One of the guys that's in my family, Doc, I've known him for years and years. And we're at this retreat, and all the guys are getting on him about his past marriage and his relationship. And, I mean, they're just roasting this guy. And I'm sitting there in awe going, like, oh, my God, I can't believe they're doing that to Doc. So how can they do that? George, what I just want to jump up and knock him out. And he said, why don't you go talk to Doc about it? So I grabbed him, and we spent half the evening talking about that relationship that he was in, the things that he went through. And it was like this boulder had been lifted off my shoulders again. It was like, wow, I could talk about what was going on with me. And I felt so much spirituality and so much relief and so much healing in that sponsorship retreat. So I'm coming back. The following year, I gave myself a break. They said, after I got divorced, my father said, guess what, get yourself a break again for another year. I'm like, that when I got here, get to do it again. So I gave myself that year break, and I went back to that retreat again, and I said, I want to move up here. You know, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I need to make a change in my life. And my girls were about 15 and 16 at the time, and they said, we want to go live with Mom. They were living with me at the time. I got custody of the girls, and I was a single dad, and I was doing the deal, and it was great. I mean, I loved raising those girls. They still love them to death today. And they said, we want to go live with Mom. And I said, probably a good idea, because I don't know if you're going to make it to 18 if you're living with me now at this age. And so they decided to go live with Mom, and I decided I needed to move to North Carolina for a short time, and moved up there, and it was very healing for me. You know, I got a lot of recovery, got a lot of people up there that I care for, and I'd get up there, and they would complain about, I had to drive 5 miles to get to a meeting tonight, and I would bust out laughing, going like, you have no idea how good you have it here. You've got 5 meetings any night of the week. You can pick and choose where you want to go. I said, this is great. You got 2 areas in 1 city. This is amazing, you know. I mean, I love the recovery up there. I was able to change careers. You know, I've been working in a juice factory down in Florida my whole life, and I had enough of that, and I was ready to make some changes, and I got up there, and I had no idea what I was going to do, but I knew I was going to do something different. Something was going to come along, and that's how I wound up in the career I'm in today. You know, I'm in the aircraft industry, which is amazing. You know, I'd never flown on an airplane in my life when I was using before I got clean. You know, I had to get clean the first time I took a flight. Today I get to work on $1 million airplane, which is amazing. You know, it blows me away every time I go to work. It's like, you just don't know who I am. You know, I got this old guy, this old black guy preacher that I worked with, and we were waiting on an inspector one afternoon, and had this young kid. He was about 19, 20 years old, and we're standing there talking, and he looked at me and says, you know, if you knew what he knew and he knew what you knew, you'd be twice as smart. And I looked at him, I said, if he knew what I knew, he'd be scared. And he started laughing. I said, no, I'm serious. You have no idea what I know. And it's so true. But it was amazing that I was able to change careers and get into the aircraft industry. You know, I had no idea, you know, because a lot of people I work with said, oh, you got military experience. I said, no, I've never been in the military, unless Salvation Army counts. And they said, no, we don't think so. So I was able to get a job up there, and they were willing to take me in and give me on the job training, and that's how I started that career. And during that time, it was like I changed a couple times, went to a couple different locations. After 9/11, I lost my job. You know, there were no jobs to be had in the aircraft industry. You know, everything just kind of basically just shut down. You know, I found myself with double digits clean, jobless, homeless, and penniless. And I'm going like, oh, shit, what do I do now? It's like, I had you people. Yeah, I knew that no matter how bad it got, I didn't have to use, that I would find a way out of this. I wound up getting a job at Target, you know, working in a department store until I could get an aircraft job again. And I'm in there working with these people, and they're looking at me like, you're too smart to be working in this. What are you doing here? I said, I can't get a job in my field. Until I get a job in my field, this is what I need to do. I got to put food on the table, got to keep the lights on. And that's what I did, you know. And 6 months later, I was able to get back into my favorite line of work of doing aircraft again. And the cool thing about it is I tell people, it's like, I don't know everything there is to know about airplanes, but I know how to find the information. And I don't know everything about recovery, but I know how to find the information. You know, all I got to do is look around the rooms. You know, I have all these resources right here at my disposal. All I got to do is ask. And that's the cool thing about this. You know, my predecessors are the ones that taught me how to work this program, how to live this way of life, and they still guide me today. I was very fortunate. We got to go to Fricka this past couple weekends ago and get down there, and it's like, these are the people that I got clean with. These are the people that are still around. And when we came around, there was no time in NA. I mean, this was back in the 80s. You know, there was hardly anybody with any time. They said, well, you got to go to this other fellowship because there's no clean time in NA. And people would say, why don't you stick around and make a difference? And we did. And there's a lot of us from back then that are still around today. And that's amazing. You know, there's about 10 people that I can think of offhand that got clean same time I did, and they're still around today. And it's like, wow, we did stick around. We did make a difference. And watching Narcotics Anonymous grow, it's been amazing. You know, I was able to go to my first World Convention was down in New Orleans. And we drove a little Chevy Chevette, three of us in a little Chevy Chevette. Crazy trip. And got down there. Met this girl from Oklahoma. She was in a wheelchair. And she says, yeah, I missed my friends, and they took off the other day before I got with them. And so I just went ahead and hitchhiked down to New Orleans in a wheelchair. And I was like, wow, that's a lot of faith. So we wound up taking her in. She stayed with us at our hotel room, and we kind of pushed her around, going to all the meetings and all the stuff. And convention got over, and it's like, well, we're heading back to Florida. What are you going to do? And she says, I never found my friends. I'll just hitchhike home. I was like, wow, that's amazing, you know, the faith that we have in these rooms. And hopefully she made it home all right. She's still around today, you know. But it was like, it's so amazing the people that we meet in the rooms, you know, the characters we meet in the rooms. But the sad thing is we see so many people come in the rooms. If you've been around here for any amount of time, you see them come, you see them go, and you see had to bury them. And that's sad because this disease, it's cunning, it's baffling, it's deadly, it's very, very patient, you know, to look for an opening. You know, it's done that with me many a times. You know, like I shared about, you know, I had 9 years clean and I had it made. You know, I had the house, I had the wife, I had two cats in the yard. The only thing I'm missing was the white picket fence. You know, and I got very complacent in my recovery. I got to the point to where it's like, okay, I'll go to a meeting this week. And it's like, okay, I'll miss a meeting this week, I'll go next week. Well, okay, I'll go to a meeting maybe once a month. You know, so I just got very complacent. So I was traveling that summer, and I told my sponsor, I said, well, my anniversary's coming up, what do I do? And he said, well, wherever you are, just stop in and pick up a key tag. And he said, when you get back, we'll talk about it. So I did that. So we're traveling with my wife, and we went up to Chicago. My aunt was dying at the time, and we're driving back. She got deathly ill. We had to take the emergency room in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Never been to Fort Wayne in my life. I'll probably never go back. You know, the only thing I knew about Fort Wayne was that's where they built the Chevy trucks at. And so we're there 2 days, and I said, I need to go catch a meeting. You know, I'm going stir crazy in this hotel room. So I went to the meeting that night, walked in, didn't know a soul. And I shared a little bit while I was in town, and they went through the meeting, and they got to the key tags, and they got the anniversary tags, and I picked up a Moonglow for my 9 years clean, and there was a guy in there. He says, anybody want to pick up a white key tag for a relapse? And this kid picked up a white key tag, and he came up to me after the meeting. He said, I had 9 years and went back out. I was like, wow, God talking to me loud and clear. I got back, and I heard that message, and I told my sponsor what had happened. I'm like, I need to get back involved. Because this complacency stuff's going to kill me. I knew it. And I know how this disease works. It's way out here. It won't tell me to use it. It'll just say, see, you ain't good enough. They don't even know who you are. You don't even show up anymore. And then it'll go A, B, C, D, and before I know it, I'm F. You know, that's it. So I have to be careful with that. So as soon as I start hearing that disease, I'm talking way out here saying, you know, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you know, you don't have a good enough story, you don't have a good enough program, it's going to come right out of my shoulder, and next thing you know, it's going to say, well, you just might as well go ahead and use, you can show them. It's like, ooh. I try to stop it way before it gets to that point. And the people I sponsor, you know, I let them know, you never have to use again against your will. And that's why it's so cool to see all the newcomers that are here. If you're a newcomer, welcome. If you're an old-timer, please stay. We need you. I need you. Because this is how this program works, you know. One addict helping another is without parallel. You know, I could never do this by myself. Some of the stuff that I've learned in these rooms has been amazing. Some of the adventures that I've had in the rooms have been amazing. I go to conventions on a regular basis. I go to NA campouts. I've been able to travel to California and go to meetings out there. I've got friends all up and down the East Coast because of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I got here this weekend. The only people I knew were the people that I came with. I made some new friends. The cool thing, I went to the No Bullshit meeting. Runs into a guy that knows my sponsor. Been to meetings at this house also. You know, that, how cool is that? You know, that's a, you know, God showing off. That's what I call that. You know, it's amazing that we, and the people that I've met since I've been here this weekend, you know, I've made a bunch of new friends. This is like so cool. You know, you people are helping me in my recovery. You know, somebody asked me, they said, at the convention, they said, you got 30 years clean. How's it feel? And I'm going, like, I don't know. This is kind of like new territory for me. And I thought about it for a minute, and I went back and told them, I said, I made it to the bonus round. I said, I'm looking forward to the next 30. That's the cool thing about this, you know. As long as I keep living this way of life. And that's what I like about the 12-step. If you read the last of the 12-step, it says, the steps don't end here. They're a new way of life. They're a new beginning. And I asked my sponsor that one time. I said, well, how long do you have? You know, I went to him with all those questions that we have. So, well, what about a job? What about a place to live? What about the kids? What about this? What about that? And he said, well, you better get your priorities in order. If you don't stay clean, nothing else is going to matter. Everything's going to take care of itself. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to get it. Staying clean's got to be priority one. And I said, well, how long you got to work these steps? Really, how long you got to work these steps? He said, you only got to work them until you learn how to live them. I said, well, how long did that take? He looked at me and said, in your case, it's going to be a while. You know, and the longer I stuck around, the truer that statement became. Because I realized I didn't know how to work these steps. I didn't know how to apply these principles in all my affairs. You know, I got involved in service, like I said. You know, I just did a thing since I've been down in Georgia. You know, my job took me down there, and they gave me a real cool job offer. And I got down there and went to a meeting my first night in Savannah and made a connection. The guy gave me his phone number and said, when you get back, give me a call. And that's what I did. When I got back a couple weeks later, I gave him a call and went to a meeting that night, and I found out how small the area was down there in Savannah. The whole eastern coast of Georgia was one area when I got there. I was like, oh my God. I was like, I told my sponsor, I feel like I stepped back in time. This is how it was when I got clean back in the 80s. And he said, yeah, but guess what? You know how it turns out. And it's like, you're right. So I stuck around and I shared with people my experience, strength, and hope. And I got involved in service. As soon as I got there, they go like, oh yeah, you're going to be our GSR. And I got the area service. And they go, oh yeah, you're going to be our chair now. You know, and got involved from there. You know, and then after that, we decided that we needed to split off the area because people down South Georgia didn't know what was going on the north end of the coast there. And it was kind of like breaking up with your girlfriend. You know, it's like the first day you hate her, the next day you miss her. You know, it was like that when we split up the area. But it was part of, you know, it's a natural part of Narcotics Anonymous, it was that growth and recovery. So we put together this area down there, Savannah Low Country area, which has been pretty awesome. And watching that area grow, you know, I was talking about that the other night. It's like, for instance, I've been down here almost 12 years now. That blows my mind that I've been there that long. Going to meetings and seeing people that came in since I've lived in that area that are still doing the deal, that got the message. And they're still staying clean. It's like, wow, this is so cool. This is what we do. We carry that message. We formed that area, and they said, well, okay, we're going to get chair, vice chair, treasurer. We need somebody to go to region and represent us. And I said, I'll do it. And they said, well, we can't give you any money. I said, I didn't ask for any money. I said, I'm willing to go do it. You know, they said, you got to have the means. You know, they told me when I got clean, you know, got the time and the resources to do the job. And I said, yeah, I got the time and the resources. I'm willing to do it. And they said, okay, tag, you're it. So I go to the Georgia region and told them why we were there, and we were forming this new area. And I shared with some of the guys there, and they said, they're like, what, they didn't give you any money for gas? I said, no, I didn't ask for any. I said, this program saved my life. I said, this is a debt I'll never repay. You know, these are the things that keep me coming back, and I'm willing to be involved in service and willing to give back. And we formed that region and became part of the Georgia region, which is pretty awesome. You know, we're one of the newest areas in there. And I found it afterwards, you know, when Narcotics Anonymous started in Georgia region, it was like you had Atlanta and you had the rest of Georgia. that's pretty much how it was. I mean, right now they're working on a history book, which is really cool, the history of NA in Georgia. I know Florida has one, New York just finished theirs, and Georgia's working on theirs now. You know, that's pretty cool to see that come around, you know, and be able to share some of my information and some of the things that I've learned with the people there. You know, I got involved on a regional level. I know people all over Georgia now because of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I got to go to a convention in Atlanta. They had the Grinna convention there. I ran into Mr. Bill, Tuffy, Motorcycle Ed, all these predecessors, people that I care and love about. And I was the newbie there, and I was like, wow, I feel like I just fit right in with these people. You know, I finally feel like I belong. Because for the longest time I come to meetings, I mean, with ears clean, I feel like I still didn't belong. I'm still struggling to be a part of, and it's like, that was the first time in a long time I felt like, yeah, I'm a part of this. You know, I'm part of this history. I'm a part of the, you know, seeing these things happen. So it's just been amazing. It's been amazing to be able to do that. And the people that I know in Georgia now is because of that. Thank you, Joe. And because of that, you know, I got friends all over Georgia. You know, I got to meet, like I said, I got to meet Bo, got to pick his brain. Got to talk to some of these people who are talking about the baby blues and the gray book and all the controversy going on with that. You know, and it's like one side or the other. There's no in between. And I just tell them, you know, I said, I got clean on the third edition, and it still says sobriety in the book. And people say, no, it doesn't say that in our literature. No, so take them right to the basics right here. You know, emotional sobriety in reality is our goal, not mere physical abstinence. They're going like, wow, they took that out of the book. Yeah, that and the other line, my favorite line in the basic text, they took that out from the third edition. It was in the story about why me, why not me? At the end of that story, it said, why me? Because I'm an addict, and God has been very, very good to me. It says, why not me? Because the largest room in the world is the room for improvement. And it was like, I tattooed that on the inside of my forehead. I needed to remember that. You know, it was so important that I remember some of these sayings that I learned in these rooms. You know, I'd go to meetings there. We had this little church we'd go to, meeting in the library, and a poster on the wall. I said, love is not how much you touch each other, it's how much you reach each other. And I was like, wow, that's the perfect definition of love. That's what we do here. You know, we love each other. You know, we reach, you know, one addict reaching out to another is so important. You know, since my time's getting close, one thing I want to share. You know, if you got a year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever, take a good look later on tonight or tomorrow. Take a look at your medallion. You know, in our symbol it says God, self, society, and service. You know, we become responsible, productive members of society, and that's so important. And on the backside, it says that no addict seeking recovery need die from addiction. And my gratitude speaks when I care and when I share with others the NA way. And that's what I try to do, is share my story. This program saved my life. You know, it keeps me coming back. I go to meetings on the regular. I stay involved. I go to conventions. I go to campouts. You know, I love the people. I love the basic text. I love what this program's done for y'all and what it's done for me. And I'll keep coming back, and I hope you all keep coming back. Thanks for having me. Thank you.